Good morning and welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we are on Yechezkel Perek Mem Zayin, the 47th chapter of Yechezkel. We're really towards the end now, and this perek has two distinct sections. The first section is the final image of the Beis HaMikdash, and that is the overflowing spring. And the second part of the perek deals with the division or the redivision of the land of the Israel and the new extended land of Israel. So let's deal with it each piece by piece. Very, very powerful, very emotive descriptions over here. The first part of the perek runs from Pasuk Aleph to Pasuk Yud Beis, and it's this remarkable description. After describing the Beis HaMikdash and how it works and the extent and the parameters and the Kohanim and their service and the Nasi and everything to do with that, now this is the final image, this is the capstone image that Yechezkel has over the Beis HaMikdash and how it's supposed to influence the world. Here's how it goes. It starts off by how he's told that he's brought back to the Beis HaMikdash in this vision. And there's water which is ebbing over the sill of the door from the east side, kipnei habayis kadim, facing the east, and it's going underneath the ground on the right hand shoulder. We're talking about the south shoulder of underneath the ground, and it's going over the door sill. And then at this point in time, it flows outwards, and the man who's the measuring man, this image, this angel who's been measuring the Beis HaMikdash, now comes out of a kav biyadon. He has this measuring rod in his hand. So he measures 1,000 amos. Then he goes to the next level. And the water now reaches his birkayim, right? His knees. He measures another 1,000. And it goes up to the mosnaim, to the loins. And then he measures another 1,000, and I'm no longer able to enter into that water because the water is too rough. The water is not possible. So that at this point in time, he goes to the side of the river, and he sees that there's this large Eitz Rav Me'od. There's a very large tree which is on the side, Mizeh. And this angel goes on to explain. Vayomer Eli, Hamayim Oeli Yotzim El Hagalilo Hakadmoni. It goes to the Galil, to the valley of the eastern valley. Vayardu El Aravan. Will go through the desert. Vayayama El Yama. They're going to go from sea to ocean, and they're going to heal the water, and everything which goes in it is going to be healed, and there's going to be much fish in it. It's a beautiful description of how everything will be healed by this water which is emanating from the Beis HaMikdash, and it'll reach both sea and ocean, and everything that reaches no tree which is fed by it will ever shrivel. It'll always be fed. Because the water leaves from the Mikdash, and will be healing water. What a remarkable, remarkable prophecy. What is really going on over here? Is this real? Is this just an image? So the Mishnah in Shkolim, in the sixth parak, tells us that in fact, there is a gate on the east side of the Beis HaMikdash, even the times of the second Beis HaMikdash, which is called Shar HaMaim, the gate of water. It can be seen in archaeological digs. Why was it called Shar HaMaim? So the Mishnah says, Sheboi machnisin tzlochis shel maim shel nisach echag. That was how they brought the jug of water for the water libation on the festival of Sukkot. But Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov would say, no. Boy Hamayim Mefachim Mefachim Vasidim Lyos Yotzim Mitachas Miftan Abayis. No, that's the gate made so the water can exit it in the future when the water will emanate from the Beis HaMikdash. So the Mishnah seems to deal with this in a very serious way. On a pragmatic level, there's a Shar Hamayim from which the water will actually exit. It's interesting to notice that the name Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is usually the name associated with an individual who had great expertise in the Beis HaMikdash. So this is what his understanding is the actual architecture is going to reflect this notion of Yechezkel's prophecy for the future, which we hope and pray should be something we get to see. Where's it coming from? How does this work? So the Radak quotes a beautiful Gemara in Yuma. And the Gemara in Yuma says the following. What a powerful description. Rabbi Pinchas says in the name of Rabbi Huna, of Tzipora, that the following. Ma'ayana yotzi mebeis kodesh hakadoshim. There would be this spring that is emanating from the Holy of Holies, and it's so thin. It's like the karnei chagavim. It's like sort of the feelers of grasshoppers, which is one of the words the Gemara uses for extremely thin crack, sometimes in dough. But the point is, like, it's a very, very thin spring. And then it becomes like a thinner thread of used in the weaving process. Kevin Shigela Pesach Ulam, when it enters and leaves the Ulam, the which is the outer chamber of the Beis HaMikdash, the antechamber of the Beis HaMikdash. Now it's like a chut shel erev. It's the thicker, it's the woof as opposed to the woof thread. For kevan sheigia le pesach azara, when it exits the courtyard, nasek kafi pach katan. It's the thickness of sort of the neck of a bottle, and it describes how it keeps getting thicker and thicker and thicker as it goes out. And that's sort of what Yechezkel is describing as he goes further. Is every 1,000 amos that he goes out, it becomes more of a river, more of a raging rapids as he goes further outwards. And if you actually look carefully, the Malbim points out that there's four sets of 1,000 amos as you move away from the Beis HaMikdash as it gets deeper and deeper and deeper. What's going on over here? So the Malbim says, look, what's happening over here is there seems to be a description that the water is leaving the Beis HaMikdash in both, first at least, an easterly direction, but also it says Mizeh Mizeh from both sides to going to the Dead Sea and the Mediterranean Sea. And he says there's two audiences in the world. There's the Eastern world, there's the world of Yishmael, of the Arabs, and there's the world of Edom, the world of Christianity. And ultimately Judaism is going to influence and has influenced, in fact, it influenced the start of those religions. But nonetheless, it's going to continue to influence them in a way that the world will realize Judaism's real tafkid, will understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu's role in this world, B'nai Yisrael's role, and the uniqueness of the hierarchy in the world's emanating spirituality. But that needs to emanate from the Beis HaMikdash. When the Beis HaMikdash will function properly, it'll emanate outwards into both directions, to the east and the west. Both the east and the west will see the uniqueness of Judaism and how Judaism contains the best of both and the seeds of both, and how it can inform both to be to the best it can be. And in fact, if you look at these descriptions beautifully over here, you'll see that it actually talks about the healing of the salt of the Dead Sea. Meaning to say, we know that the Dead Sea is today the Yam HaMelech. Yam HaMelech means the salt sea, but we call it actually the Dead Sea, Yam HaMavet, technically in Hebrew, because nothing grows there, because there's salt. It was from the destruction of Sodom, a nation that refused to see the light of Hashem in this world. Well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to allow the Beis HaMikdash to reach out beyond its boundaries in such a way of energy, in such a life-giving force, that even the Yam HaMelech will be a place where there'll be fishermen from the north to the south. That's the way that's described in these psukim, in a very, very powerful and beautiful description. Why? Because the energy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he is functional in this world, when we allow him to be functional in this world because of our actions, because of having the schus to create the third Beis HaMikdash, the entire world will be fed from that energy, which moves from east to west, the entire area of Yerushalayim. In fact, it's the Mayim Chaim, it's the living water, which will be the energy in the epicenter of the world, as the Malbim describes. A very, very powerful, beautiful description, which we, God willing, will have the schus of seeing. Finally, we move into the last and second section of this Perek, which moves from Yud Gimel to the very end, and Chaf Gimel, and this is describing the division of Nachla, the new land division in the tribes of Israel. There's a number of differences between this land division and the division we saw at the times of in the Torah, and ultimately the times of Yehoshua ben Nun, when they divided up the land. Times of Yehoshua ben Nun, when they divided up the land based on the Din Torah, the theory was is that it depended on the amount of population, and it depended on the fertility of the land. So a land which is more fertile, there was less of for that tribe because it could be used better. More arid land, there was lots of given because it was desert territory. It's interesting that now that we've just finished this ultimate messianic vision of Israel being this fertile land from north to south, east to west, the fertility issue is not going to be a criterion. So the land division is going to be equal in that respect because the entire land is giving forth of life. If you read through these psukim, you'll notice that some of the descriptions of where the borders are exactly are pretty difficult to identify. We're given cities, we're given valleys, we're given mountains, but it's not very clear as to where they are. There's a number of different scholars, archaeologists, the theories as to what this really is. The Da'at Mikra, in his introduction to this mini section, tenders a few suggestions. He gives one suggestion where the northmost region of the Har-Ahar is to a mountain deep in, actually in Turkey, Erciyes. Mount Erice in Turkey, and the southmost goes until the Nile River in Egypt. So we're talking about an massive, immense expansion of territory, and there's going to be 13 strips of land, as we're going to see in the next parak, with each one equidistant is going to be to a different tribe, all the way from the very north, all the way through the south, encompassing Syria, Lebanon, Israel, all the way down through the Sinai into Egypt, which is a remarkable amount of land. There are more conservative estimates that the northmost, the Hor-Hahar, which is referred to the north, is referring to an area just south of Tripoli, not Tripoli the country, but Tripoli the city in Lebanon today, in the northern reaches of Lebanon, and southmost goes to El Arish, which of course, El Arish, we know from the Six-Day War, we know is a famous battleground, which doesn't go as deep into Egypt. Whichever way we understand it, is going to impact how wide each of the strips of land are going to be, so we have to think about that in fuller perspective. The last thing that we're told in this parak is a very beautiful thing, as it says, that the Nachla is going to be for everybody. Even those who joined you later, those people who weren't necessarily naturally Jewish, they joined, they were gerim. And the Malbim points out, yes to gerim, absolutely. But they're going to also inherit among the territory of the land of Israel. But, says the Malbim, this is referring to the people who joined the Jewish people throughout the generations, when it wasn't so easy, when it wasn't clear that the Jews were the winners, when it wasn't so simple, when Jews were still being slaughtered and terrorized around the world. Those Gerim, those people who realized and their neshama came back to the place where it started, those will be part of the Nachla. Not necessarily the people who will just be inspired by the lights and sound show of the Gog and Magog, says the Malbim, because when it's obvious, that's not the same thing as when there was a decision which needed to be made because of finding truth for the sake of truth, which is what the Malbim is pointing out is the focus of this last point here. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.